Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rishi Bhandari, and I represent Uthi Technology Corporation. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for my rebuttal, and I'll be mindful of my time, as I've been told to do. Your Honors, this is actually, while this case has been going on for a very long time, it's been since 1993, pending since 1993, this issue before you right now is a very, very simple issue. There's essentially two questions which I'm going to address in my oral argument this morning. First, did Uthi USA suffer a direct injury, or was it just indirectly harmed because of some sort of injury that occurred to Uthi Singapore? Then the second question, which is really a case of first impression, where the Ninth Circuit will have the opportunity to lay down a rule which should be followed by everyone going forward, is a very simple rule that will be derived from the following question. If a corporation is incorporated in the United States and has its principal place of business in the United States, and it suffers a direct economic injury, is that a domestic injury under the Supreme Court's understanding and of RJR Nabisco? So I'm going to start with the first one, which is a little bit more complicated, but still relatively straightforward. The second one, as you'll see, is an absolute no-brainer. It's going to be very easy for you to determine that this is a domestic injury.
If we find that there is no direct injury to the United States Corporation, we do not have to deal with the second question. True?
That's correct. Absolutely correct. And so the first question and the essential inquiry about whether or not it's a direct injury is to determine whether or not Uthi USA suffered an injury distinct from the injuries, if any, that were suffered by Uthi Singapore. This court in Pareto in 1998 stated something very similar. It said the pivotal question is whether the injury is incidental to or an indirect result of a direct injury to the corporation or to the whole body of its stock or property. If it is those things, if Uthi USA, if the reason why I'm here today is to defend Uthi USA because it just suffered some sort of incidental injury to something that happened to Uthi Singapore, it is not a direct injury.
Let me see if I've got the facts straight.
Sure.
The conspirators here, and you won the arbitration award of $9 million, the conspirators here conspired to take away business from
Uthi Singapore.
Uthi Singapore.
That's right.
And they were successful.
Yes.
And as a result, the value of Uthi Singapore was driven down in the eyes of the market. True?
So, no, that is incorrect.
Hmm?
That is incorrect. That last part.
Well, wasn't that your claim that what the conspirators did was to spirit away the business of Uthi Singapore so that Uthi Singapore's income and therefore profit and therefore value was driven down?
No, so Your Honor, we have a slightly different, our case is a little bit different.
You may give it a spin, as was mentioned in the last case by my esteemed colleague, but the facts are those, are they not?
No, Your Honor.
Now, was there any fraud involved in the issuance of the securities?
No, there's no fraud involved in the issuance.
Okay, so it's not a case of, it's not a 10b-5 situation where there's a fraud in the issuance of securities or
Correct.
In the manipulation of the securities. Your conspirators weren't saying the title which USA or Uthi USA has as to the shares of Uthi Singapore is invalid because they stole the shares. They're not saying that.
Correct.
So what they're doing is they're driving down the business of Uthi Singapore.
No, Your Honor. So that's where I respectfully
disagree.
All right.
Give me your version. Let's see what But remember the difference between the facts and the version.
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. So this is a swindled shareholder case. Okay, that is the facts of this case. This is a swindled shareholder. What happened is Uthi USA sold its shares for less than the amount that it would have sold the shares had it not been defrauded.
And how was it? What was the contact between the conspirators and the shareholders?
Yes, there was lots of direct contact between the between the conspirators and Uthi USA.
So the conspirators were saying to the shareholders in the United States, your shares in Uthi are not valuable, and they're going down in value, And they were misrepresenting the facts?
Yes, exactly right.
How were they doing that rather than taking the business away from Uthe Singapore?
Right, sure. So what they were doing is they were sending faxes showing that Uthe Singapore didn't have any orders. It was showing that they didn't have any revenue coming in from customers who had bought. Now, those things were false. That was fraud. Now, I'd like to give you one analogy, which I think is the framework to think about this. It would be like having a car. And the mechanic, when you take your car in to get the car fixed, sees that, oh my gosh, this is a beautiful vintage car that is worth hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, if it runs properly and it's in mint condition. So the mechanic pours some sugar into the gas tank and then sends a fraudulent Carfax report saying that this car had been in Hurricane Harvey, so it had suffered some sort of flood damage. False. So then when those false statements, using wire fraud because they send a fax machine, putting sugar in a gas tank would not be a predicate RICO act, but if it was done through wire fraud or mail fraud, a second sort of thing was done to provide false information about the condition of the car, and then the mechanic says, I'd like to buy your car, I'll offer you $1,000 for it because it doesn't run, it was in Hurricane Harvey, these things make it basically worthless, it costs money to take it off your hands because people will have to junk it and spend money to actually get rid of this car, I'll pay you $1,000 for it, and the person sells the car. That person was defrauded and swindled in the exact same way that Uthe USA was swindled. That is what happened here.
So what is the difference between how much you got and your $9 million?
What's that?
Why is that any different than what you got in the $9 billion?
Your Honor, it's not. This was
in other words, the whole $9 million is this?
The whole $9 million is, so that is exactly what
my worry about that is this. Supposing I even believe you that this claim might be an individual claim for the corporation in the United States. What is the harm experienced by the shareholders, now the United States, which is different or distinct from the harm its subsidiary suffers on account of the same fraud?
It's totally different, Your Honor.
What's the difference?
Yeah. So again,
I can only measure it by the value of the shares.
No, Your Honor.
Well, how do I measure it any other way? Seems to me that you've already suggest this is not a claim for lost sales of its own generator and transducer products. It's not a claim for lost sales. It's not a claim for overhead expenses.
Right.
It's not any of those. The only thing it is a RICO claim.
Yes, it is a RICO claim, and I'll explain to you exactly how. If you could just give me a moment. The reason why Uthe Singapore did not suffer a commensurate harm with the swindling that was suffered by Uthe USA is because Uthe Singapore wasn't going out of business. There was false faxes, and there was information suggesting that Uthe Singapore was not being able to sell to the customers that it used to have in the old days, but those things weren't true. Uthe Singapore was actually doing just fine. And the reason why there's...
All you're doing is trying to say this is an individual claim. I want to know how I'm going to determine what the harm is that is experienced by your shareholders any different from the harm that its subsidiary suffered on the account of the same fraud.
Okay. So one very direct way to think about it is Uthe Singapore did not suffer any harm whatsoever by Uthe USA getting swindled out of its shares. Uthe Singapore can never, ever sue anybody.
Well, Uthe Singapore is the one who was losing all the sales.
No,
Your
Honor.
Uthe Singapore is the one from whom all of these things were then sent to another person. How can you say they didn't suffer any harm?
Because it was sent to entities that became the controlling, that controlled Uthe Singapore subsequently. But it doesn't matter. Uthe Singapore might have suffered some harm. And
that's why. So where in your briefing do you suggest what the damages are and how would they be valued other than shares?
The way in which they're valued is...
In your briefing?
Yes.
I mean, I looked. It seems to me that in your briefing, the total value you have is the difference between the value of the shares after this fraud and the value of the shares before the fraud. And I'm still trying again to understand why that isn't the same harm experienced by the the corporation.
Okay, sure. Let me go back to my analogy. Maybe this will make it clear.
Well, your analogy didn't make it clear to me.
Well, let me try one.
So maybe you better try again. Because okay. I'm looking at what the damages are. After everything you've said, and I frankly have argued about this with my law clerk for some time, as to whether there's even any individual claim at all. But when we get to supposing there is one, where's the damage alleged?
The damage alleged is that...
Is nonetheless the difference between the value of the shares that it would have been and the value of the shares after the fraud.
And
that's the damage.
No, Your Honor.
What is it then? And where is it in your brief?
Sure. It's in our brief. We...
What is it first?
Okay, sure. The difference is what my client thought the shares were worth when they were being fed false information about Uthi Singapore's customers. They thought these shares were worth nothing. The shares were not actually worth nothing because Uthi Singapore had not been damaged to the extent that my client was told Uthi Singapore had been damaged. So it is like the fake Carfax being sent saying that there was a flood and Hurricane Harvey and this car was damaged. The car was not actually damaged in Hurricane Harvey. That did not reduce the price of the car in any way whatsoever. Uthi Singapore was still a thriving, great business with lots of customers. But the false statements that were made to my client, Mr. Goodson, by people at Atrium, the defendants in this case, led him to believe that Uthi Singapore had lost all of its customers. It led him to believe that they weren't being able to collect from the customers that they had delivered stuff to. So he thought that his shares were worthless, but in fact, Uthi Singapore was a thriving business. That's the shareholder swindling fact pattern that we're dealing with. And there's no other way to recover.
This wasn't argued to Judge Alsup, though.
What's that?
This was not argued down below. Down below, it was strictly our injury is the loss in the value of shares.
Yes, it is the loss in the value of the shares between what they should have been worth and what we believe they were worth because there was a fraud.
And how do we know what that is? What number do you apply to that?
That was where the expert analysis came in, where we're going to have expert testimony, where in the Singapore arbitration, that is precisely what the Singapore arbitration established. They said, you know what? If there hadn't been all these lies told to you, Mr. Goodson, if you hadn't been defrauded, then you would have known that your shares were worth this amount, which was $9 million more than what you sold them for. That's what this case is about. Now, why are we still here?
Well, because then, after you get there,
yes.
Then why doesn't Sparling take away all you got?
Sparling has nothing to do with this case.
Well, just a minute. Sparling says suits for harm to the corporation may not form the basis of a civil RICO claim.
Exactly correct.
And that's exactly what we have here.
Nope. No, exactly incorrect.
Because, well, I guess I want to hear what you have to say, but...
Sure. Sparling was a case where there were shareholders, and the shareholders were basically...
You have a case where there's a shareholder.
No.
Your corporation.
No, Your Honor. We're suing because we were swindled out of our shares. But I can explain why it's different in any event. There's two differences. First, Sparling is a case where there was a shareholder. When you have a shareholder who says, listen, this company had its assets diverted and taken away, or there was other sorts of corporate waste, that is a derivative claim of the company, and so the shareholders have to bring a derivative claim. What we're saying here is that's not what happened. Uthi Singapore is just like a car that there was a false Carfax report saying that it had been flooded in Hurricane Harvey. It was actually a thriving business, and it was doing great. Uthi Singapore wouldn't have necessarily been worth less or considerably less.
But I just disagree on what Sparling says.
No, Your Honor, I agree with you what Sparling says.
Your position,
I'm saying that the damage was not to Uthi Singapore.
The acts which caused damage to the shareholders was the misrepresentation in communications by the people who were running Uthi Singapore that the sales were going down, the customers weren't paying.
Yes.
Not the fact that they stole the business for their own business.
Exactly right.
Okay, I've got you.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Now, that wasn't the basis of your winning the arbitration award, was it?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. And in fact, the best place to find that is on page 10 of the defendant's opposition brief. The defendant's opposition brief, footnote 1 on page 10, says the following. I'm just going to read the quote. The arbitrator expressly concluded UTI USA was not entitled to any damages for the time after the stock sale because the question when determining UTI USA's damages is not what UTI Singapore lost, but what UTI USA itself lost. That is what we're talking about. UTI USA lost shares that were worth over $9 million because they were lied to.
Because they were lied to, not exactly. Because they stole the money. They stole
right.
The business.
Exactly.
I got you.
Exactly right. So now once we know that this is a direct injury that UTI USA suffered, just like the Singapore arbitration said it, just like page 10 of the defendant's brief says it, once we know that, then we get to the really easy question where this panel is going to have the opportunity to lay down this rule very clearly. The easy question is, when an American company suffers a direct
economic... Is it a domestic injury under Morrison?
Yes.
And the answer is... You're over your time.
All right. Meaning I've reserved a little bit for rebuttal or no?
You can have 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Now, Ms. Rath, or Ms. Nath, I'm going to ask you to answer what Mr. Bhandari has been saying, because this is, to me, a new focus. That's a kind word for version on this case.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Judge Bay, I agree. You can't change the record and the facts in this case. It's a 5-year-old case.
You mean you can have two sides to an issue, but only one side to the facts?
Correct, Your Honor. So what's always been alleged in this case and in the Singapore arbitration is the same, right? And UTI USA has always alleged...
We're not so concerned in an appeal from a motion for summary judgment with the allegations. We're interested in the evidence or lack of evidence.
Agreed, Your Honor. And just to remind the court, this is a very old case, as Mr. Bhandari said. We have had several dispositive motions and orders in this case and a previous Ninth Circuit appeal. And before that Ninth Circuit appeal, fact and expert discovery had been closed. So we were ready for trial. Mm-hmm. So there is a very well-established record. UTI USA has always set forth evidence and alleged that there was a conspiracy to destroy UTI Singapore, to divert all of UTI Singapore's business, and that's the subsidiary, not UTI USA, and destroy it as a competitor or take it over at a depressed price. So this new notion of misrepresentations does not fit the record. The record establishes that what UTI USA has always claimed is that the Singapore defendants set up a secret company that competed with UTI Singapore. They actually diverted the UTI Singapore orders. They diverted the UTI Singapore customers.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Was it argued below in the district court that it wasn't the destruction of Singapore business, but the misrepresentation by the people who were running the Singapore business to USA shareholders that the business was being ruined that
no,
caused the injury?
Not to my recollection, Your Honor. I mean,
So what we just heard from Mr. Briandri is something new to interest us in the case?
Well, so Mr. Bhandari has always argued that they should get... that it's not a securities fraud claim, but somehow because they lost their shares, they should be able to...
It's a stock swindle claim. He's claiming a misrepresentation to the shareholders as to the business in Singapore, so the shareholders become depressed and sell cheap.
And there's never been any evidence or argument submitted showing, no, UTI Singapore wasn't actually worthless. They just pretended it was worthless, right? I mean, the evidence has always been...
I will ask you... to cite for me to the record when you have your 2 minutes, where there's evidence that it wasn't the destruction of Singapore business, but the misrepresentation by the people who are running the Singapore business to the USA shareholders that caused the injury. So take down that note, and I don't want to hear it's in the record. I want to hear ER blank. All right? Now go back.
So again, Your Honor, the evidence has always been that the Youth of Singapore documents were stolen, the orders were stolen, the employees. There was a mass walkout of employees. So there was no misrepresentation about the state of Youth of Singapore. The state of Youth of Singapore was that, as Youth USA has always claimed, it was destroyed. It was, quote, faced with immediate collapse. It was worthless. And so because Youth USA owned 100% of the shares, they had to sell those shares at a depressed price to the Singapore defendants. Just a note, the Atrium defendants, who are the defendants in this case, had no involvement in the sale of the shares. They were not a part of the purchase agreement. You know, they are alleged to have assisted in stealing the business of Youth Singapore, right? They're alleged to have withheld commissions that they would have owed to Youth Singapore, and to also have not told the director of Youth Singapore, who's also the CEO of Youth USA, about those issues and amending the Youth Singapore contract. So, but again, this wasn't about misrepresentations that Youth Singapore had been destroyed. Youth Singapore had been destroyed because everything was taken away from it. And what's important, again, is that the only claim left here is to treble the Singapore Arbitration Award. And as Your Honor had stated, that award, Judge Smith, I believe that was you, that award expressly compensated Youth USA for the harm from the loss on the sale of the shares. I mean, that is what the award is for. The award said...
The award can be for the loss in the value of the shares. I think the issue here is whether the loss is alleged to be caused, and there's evidence that it was caused, A, by destruction of Singapore's business, that's your position.
Correct.
Or B, by misrepresentation by the Singapore officers and directors that the business was being destroyed when it wasn't being destroyed.
Right, Your Honor. Well,
that's his position.
Again, I won't go through it all again, but again, the evidence has always been that the orders were actually stolen. The documents were actually taken. There were no employees left in Youth Singapore anymore
To make misrepresentations.
To run the company. Mm-hmm. So Youth Singapore had actually been destroyed. I mean, that's why the sale occurred. That's why the price was paid that was paid, because there was nothing left of the company. Again, Youth USA has always said it was on the verge of immediate collapse. There was nothing left.
Your position is the employees really did walk out, not that there was a misrepresentation. They were walking out while they were busy as bees in Singapore.
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes. So, and when you look at that, I mean, that is what Youth USA is seeking to treble here. That's all that's left. And I don't need to go into it unless the court has questions, but just to make clear, Youth USA previously alleged additional harm. They always tried to say, we suffered something else, we suffered something more, the loss of our own orders, the loss of our own customers, and all of that was dismissed before the previous appeal, and it was not appealed by Youth USA. So the only claim that Youth USA has left is to treble the $9 million Singapore Arbitration Award.
I understand that. I guess you've had a good conversation with Judge Bay about the direct injury, or whether it was direct or whether it wasn't. Supposing that you could say it's direct, why doesn't Sparling say, even in that instance, there's nothing because it's all derivative to the corporation and therefore not a RICO claim?
Well, and Sparling does say that. Sparling says it, Ahn says it. I mean, because the court below found the depletion of the assets of Youth Singapore, which in turn caused the depressed valuation of Youth's shareholder interest, that's the harm. And so I agree with you, Your Honor. Sparling and Ahn both say that is a indirect, incidental harm to Youth Singapore. Youth Singapore suffered the direct harm.
Well, we start, frankly, as I understand it, with Feldman, where Feldman says that if all of the corporation's stockholders are harmed solely because they're stockholders, then the claim is derivative in nature. That's what Feldman says. So then you go to the next thing. Sparling says, thus claims that the corporation was defrauded by a third party and therefore suffered a loss are derivative. That's what Sparling says. Well, then if they're derivative, then it seems to me that we can go to Pan Pacific and say, therefore, clearly derivative, falling on every stockholder, majority and minority alike, and fell on each other on a per-share basis, that makes it, again, derivative. And then if I get to RICO, in the RICO context, shareholders may not pursue RICO claims based on derivative claims. And we're done. And he loses.
I agree, Your Honor. And just to emphasize...
And not even talking about direct or indirect. I'm just talking about taking the case law, applying it to what he says is a direct charge, and saying, nonetheless, you're done.
Well, I agree, Your Honor. I mean,
that's what I was trying to get him to focus on, and that's why I want you to talk about it. Am I out of it with that idea?
Well, I mean, I think that there are... So we're talking here about injury that is derivative of harm to the corporation, right? And that is considered an indirect injury. And under RICO, RICO has a proximate cause requirement, and that means you need but-for cause, right? So not all factually injured plaintiffs can bring a RICO claim, right? So even if the USA was factually injured, they can't get RICO relief unless that claim is for a direct injury, and that's the U.S. Supreme Court cases Holmes and Anza.
You disagree with your learned opponent on the basic fact in this case. He stated a theory, perhaps maybe even a factual basis, that the injury was through misrepresentation to the shareholders, that the business was going fine. You're saying, wait a minute. The arbitration award found that the business was ruined and all the employees left, and that was the injury. All right. Now, what are we to do? Is there a tribal issue of fact as to what caused the injury?
Well, there's certainly not a material issue of fact based on the record in this case. Again, there are several orders. Their fact and expert discovery has been completed. And, you know, Youth USA has always itself said that, and I understand that you're making a distinction, but they've always said all we were compensated for in the Singapore arbitration was for the loss on the value of our shares. So, you know, my argument to you is that in itself, that being the injury, is enough to make it indirect. So the fact that the damage, the injury, is the value of the shares loss, which reflects the loss to Youthy Singapore, and that's what it is, right? I mean, that's what it reflects. Youthy Singapore's value went down, and therefore, correspondingly, the value of the shares went down. And that is enough to make that injury indirect and not redressable under RICO.
Would you concede, Ms. Nath, that if there is evidence in the record that from which a reasonable jury could find that the injury was caused not because of the malfunction of the Singapore subsidiary, but because of the misrepresentations and communications that the Singapore subsidiary was failing, as Mr. Bondry says, wouldn't that be a tribal issue of fact?
Well, Your Honor, are you saying, is it a circumstance where Youthy Singapore was completely fine, where nothing was wrong with Youthy Singapore?
But they were lying to the parent.
But they were completely lying. I suppose if it's a circumstance, I mean, that sounds like a more traditional securities fraud claim, which Youthy USA has said is not its claim in this case, by the way.
But they say it's not their claim in the case.
It's a securities fraud claim. They say it in their brief.
They say it now as a securities fraud claim. They say it's a stock swindle case.
But they say in their brief it's not a securities fraud case. So
where in the brief?
It's like the second to last page, I think. It's during the discussion of the PSLRA. In their reply brief. Page 14 of the reply brief, defendants' appellees argue that Youthy's RICO claim is nothing more than a classic securities fraud claim and should therefore be barred. While this is also incorrect, and they say it in other places, I believe, as well. And that's, you know, the PSLRA was a side issue, but But, Your Honor, again, I mean, the record is replete with the damages, the injury that Youth USA has claimed, always claimed was suffered, which was always they stole Youth USA's orders. They stole Youth USA's, or sorry, excuse me, they stole Youth Singapore's orders. They stole Youth Singapore's customers. They stole Youth Singapore's documents. And because of that, Youth Singapore was valueless, and we were forced to sell our shares at a depressed price. I mean, that you will find that in the record over and over and over again. So to the extent that they're claiming misrepresentations, again, I'll remind the court, the Atrium defendants, who are the defendants here, not the Singapore defendants, had nothing to do with the sale of the shares anyway, right? They were not parties to it. They were not involved in it. And then to the extent that they're talking about faxes, those are faxes relating to Atrium's orders that they allegedly withheld commissions on. It would be faxes back and forth about those orders. But the evidence has always been allegedly that Atrium withheld those commissions, actually withheld them, didn't pretend to withhold them. They just didn't pay them. They kept them for themselves.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, Mr. Bhandari, you're going to give me some record citations of what to me is a very novel theory argued for the first time here.
So, Your Honor, it's not been argued for the first time here. If you look at the opposition brief, page 37 of it, we argued it very vociferously in front of Judge Alsup as well, where there was a back and forth where I said, when we were bamboozled, our injury was when we were bamboozled in the sale of our shares, we were saved less than we should have by a huge margin. Now, the reason we received less
than
we should have...
That's how you've calculated the damages. We're not talking about that. We're talking about causation.
Yes. The reason
now,
we received...
Is there a tribal issue of fact as to causation? Was it the misrepresentations, or was it running the business down?
Yes. And our theory on why we sold our shares for less than they were worth is you find on Mr. Goodson's affidavit, which is submitted in the record, if you look at page 56 of the record, paragraph 149... it says exchange losses were suffered by Uthi Singapore and reported to Uthi USA were for the financial years 1989, 1990, 1991, 1992, consistently reported at lower values than those shown in the audited financial accounts, the annual audited accounts. Paragraph 150 says the sales turnover of Uthi Singapore reported to Uthi USA were for the financial years 1989 through 1992, consistently reported at a lower value than those shown in the audited annual audited accounts. If you look at page 64 of the record, this is a affidavit from Catherine Yip, who was one of the conspirators who testified in paragraph 8. The plan to secretly divert customers away from Uthi Singapore and profit from the ongoing service of those customers at the expense of Uthi USA was intended to continue indefinitely in the future. And then I'm skipping ahead.
They're actually doing the company in, not misrepresenting to the shareholders that the company was doing badly.
Let me skip ahead to what she says next. Taking over Uthi Singapore was one step in the overall plan for Atrium and the employees and officers of Uthi Singapore to profit by cutting Uthi USA out of the picture and preventing future payments to Uthi USA. In fact, we knew that it might not be possible to take over Uthi US Singapore if Uthi USA and Mr. Goodson could not be convinced to sell it. That is why we set up a secret shell corporation in 1992 to divert the Uthi Singapore orders and to continue the business of distributing products to Uthi Singapore customers in the event that Uthi Singapore remained under the control of Uthi USA. They lied. Uthi Singapore
was
doing just fine.
That's water in her wheel, not yours.
No, the setting up a secret shell corporation and
it's
misleading
not misrepresenting sales. It's setting up a diversion of the business.
But if Mr. Goodson knew that all that was happening was the business was being diverted to a shell corporation, if he'd been told that, he doesn't sell his Uthi Singapore shares because Uthi Singapore has a wonderful direct claim against the people who are stealing its money. He didn't know that. He was lied to and was told
that's Uthi speculation on your base. Thank you very much. You've used up your time.
Okay.
Thank you. The case will be submitted, and that will be the end of our calendar for today. The Court thanks counsel for the very interesting argument, and we will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.